The thing that makes The Old Man and the Three unique is ownership. I did 100 episodes between Yahoo and The Ringer, and I never owned one episode. You know, I was never going to get that with The Ringer. LeBron is probably the greatest example of this because he decided to do this a long time ago when he fired the Goodwin brothers and started his own agency. And that's a great word to use here. He took agency over his entire career. So when he partners with the brand, he's not looking for an endorsement. He's looking for equity in that company. And that is the blueprint now for all modern athletes. Hi, this is JJ Redick, 14-year NBA veteran, co-founder of 342 Productions and co-host of the Old Man of the Three podcast, and I'm on the game plan.
Jay, what's up, man? It's been a while.
I know, Tim. It really has. I am thrilled that we are back for season two of the game plan. And this season, we're excited to bring the game plan to an even larger audience through our partnership with Sportechi.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the partnership with Sportechi. You and I have known the team over there for years, and it's fun to be partnering with them on this.
I know, and we were, both of us, I think, a little bit surprised with how great the reception was for season one and how many people wanted to hear our conversations with pro athletes about their interests beyond the game. But since this is our first episode of season two, and some of these new listeners might not have heard about us or know who we are, maybe this is a good chance for us to introduce ourselves.
Totally. So, Jay, I think most people would know you as an early stage investor in New York focused on celebrity, media, and technology. But we actually first met when you were at the NFL and later helped launch MSG Ventures. We kept bumping into each other at these various events back when you could go to events. The thing was, we shared a mutual interest in pro athletes, but not just what they were doing on the field, but more so the things they were doing as investors and entrepreneurs, the things we like to talk about here on the game plan.
That's right, Tim. And I've now gotten to know you and see you build your own fun tech ventures over the years. And we did both find ourselves in this position of athletes reaching out and asking us for advice on how they could become entrepreneurs and investors, especially you, because you were the first in this wave of independent strategic investors and advisors in this sports media and entertainment category. So I'm grateful that we've had this friendship where I've got to see you grow and invest in some really great companies. And now I'm grateful to be doing season two of The Game Plan with you.
Me as well. And on that note, another first is our guest today. So not only is he the first episode of season two, but he was the first active athlete to launch his own podcast. And for those of you who don't know, our guest is JJ Redick, 15-year NBA veteran. Not only is he a podcast host, but he's now a media producer with the launch of his company, 342 Productions, which was something he got off the ground at the NBA bubble. And we were excited to dig in with him on it.
Yeah, one of the things I really loved discussing with JJ was this evolution of doing his podcast on another network, like doing it on The Ringer, and going from that to now being an entrepreneur and starting his own brand and the lessons that he had from there, but also the benefit and upside that he now has in ownership and what he thinks is going to be a great category-defining business. So that's been a really, you know, interesting part of the conversation for me and definitely for my investment interests. Great to see how JJ is thinking about building his brand into something that's going to be long-lasting.
Yeah, and another thing that we get into for guests who might not be as familiar with JJ and how far he's come since becoming National Player of the Year twice in college some 15-plus years ago is he's really a modern-day renaissance man. And what I mean by that is his ability to connect with people on a deeper level is really amazing. And so on his show, yes, he has active NBA athletes and teammates, but he also has presidential candidates, right? And the CEO of Goldman Sachs, or huge movie producers, or huge authors, and he's getting things out of them that no one's heard before in interviews. So that was really interesting for me. And it's also interesting to see how he's grown from host to now entrepreneur.
Well, with that said, Tim, I think it's time to get into our very first episode of season two of The Game Plan with none other than NBA veteran, JJ Redick.
Hey, JJ, thanks for joining us on the first episode of season two of The Game Plan. I think we're going to start things out a little bit different this episode than we've started any episode of The Game Plan before. Let's listen to this.
One of the things I want to address right away about having a podcast is that I'm a player first. I take my job as an NBA player very seriously. The amount of preparation that goes into my day just to play a game is hours, not just physically, but mentally. The amount of emotion I put into a game, a practice, whatever it may be, that is my job. It's something that I cherish and I love to do.
my priority number one is being the best basketball player that I can be.
So I can see it by the look on your face that you recognize that as the very first episode you ever recorded, the first podcast you released back when you were with Yahoo's The Vertical. And my first question for you is, in building your own show, what's maybe the most unexpected thing that you've experienced over these 5 years?
Honestly, probably the willingness of people to come on podcast. I felt like when I first started, it was very hard to get guests. And a lot of people didn't really even know what a podcast was. And I was probably in that group as well. And these conversational podcasts have grown so much. People just enjoy, you know, behind the scenes, inside, you know, behind the curtains look at the lives of athletes. And we're very fortunate with our podcast, The Old Man of the Three, because we've had great guests, and guests essentially make the podcast. Tommy and I, my co-host, we can do our little spin and we can have our little shticks, but ultimately it's the guest's willingness to be vulnerable that makes a great episode. I want to say one thing real quick in response to that thing. And I remember saying that back in February of 2016. So earlier this week, we booked this for today, 2 o'clock. Some things came up yesterday, so I had to move my podcast yesterday to 4:30 and 5:30. We have a couple guests coming on today. And then last night I realized that I had committed to moderating a panel for the Stanford Business School from 10:30 to 12:30. So I usually work out 10 to 1. So I'm like, there's no way. So I hit my trainers up and I was like, yo, I'm going on the court at 7 a.m. tomorrow. John, my strength trainer, I said, I'll see you at 8 a.m. So I got my normal work in this morning, woke up at 6 to get to Midtown in time, got an hour on the court, got an hour and a half in the weight room, hustled back to start the Stanford thing. That's the biggest challenge for me personally, is just finding the time to fit in my workouts. Because in the off season, I'm training twice a day, except for Saturday. And then in the season, you're constantly having sort of a weird schedule. There's no real consistency to it. So you got to try to figure out when you can fit in these podcasts.
Yeah, well, we certainly appreciate you coming on and holding to the schedule that we had you on. It's interesting, you know, you listen a little longer on there and you caveat quite a bit the piece that basketball is number one, and understandably so, because you were the first active athlete to have a podcast. But it does seem like there's been a little bit more acceptance and understanding, certainly from the fan side. But have you ever been in a position where from the team or basketball side, you've maybe caught flack for having too much focus on the pod?
No, never too much focus on the pod. But I have had a few instances, not many, but a few instances where I've tried to book guests, and sometimes successfully book guests, where I've had to get permission, either from team owners, team presidents and GMs, coaches. I've learned to sort of navigate that world, especially if you're not having players on. The players kind of, you know, they beat to their own drum. But if I want to have someone that's a coach like Steve Nash, or a coach like Kara Lawson, someone from the front office, like there's some avenues that I have to wiggle through just because I still am sort of a competitor.
Yeah, so that's an interesting point you brought up, because, you know, on your show and having listened to a few episodes, especially now from The Ringer to what you're doing with Old Man and the Three, you kind of go back and forth. You've got an episode with Carmelo Anthony and you're talking about the game and the evolution of the game. And then you've got episodes that you're doing with Andrew Yang and Stacey Abrams. How do you think about, you know, the theme episode to episode of the show, or is there even a theme episode to episode when you're swinging that wildly from here's a look into the player's life versus here's, you know, a totally different conversation?
I think the entire podcast is born out of curiosity. And I can certainly speak at an A-plus level to any basketball-related thing. You know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I would consider myself and most of my peers to be geniuses when it comes to basketball. And there's always common ground to be found amongst players. The challenge when you have non-basketball people on is to find that common ground. Those commonalities between industries, between positions of leadership. The turning point really was, honestly, it was when George Floyd was murdered. You know, before I had people on that were non-basketball, and so now it has become more about amplifying the right voices, if that makes sense. And if I look towards the future of our country, the people's whose voices need to be amplified are people like Stacey Abrams and Andrew Yang. You know, we recorded last week with David Rubenstein, who actually reached out to us and wanted to be on the podcast. And we talked a little bit about philanthropy with him and the Giving Pledge. So, you know, it's really that curiosity and then finding those commonalities.
So I remember reading that when you initially got started in podcasting, you actually used to have a set of prepared questions in a flowchart. And based on the guy's response to question X, you would have a follow-up with question Y. And clearly, it seems like you've gotten away from that. But being somebody that's known so much for your meticulous preparation on the court, how do you bring that preparation now off the court into doing your podcast every week?
I spend a lot of time thinking about the specific guest and what is interesting about that person, whether it relates to a particular skill and how that fits within the broader scheme of basketball, or something very specific about their journey and their story that people may find interesting. Yeah. Every now and then you get really lucky and you schedule someone and it becomes topical. And our first guest was Damian Lillard. We had him on, and then he had like 50 points, 60 points, 50 points in the bubble. And we're watching our YouTube clips and they're just like, you know, they're just skyrocketing. So you get lucky every now and then with that. And then we do a draft at the end of every show. So there's prep there. You know, I want to win the draft. I want to show that I can make good decisions when it comes to drafting. And I actually, before I got on with you guys, we're doing the draft with a couple guests at 4:30 this afternoon. And so I'm working on my draft big board right now.
Yeah, the draft is a fun one, to the point where some of your fans have even gotten into, I think, reviewing the draft and like critiquing the performance of each of you. How does that come to be? Like, that's a pretty set segment that you have every single podcast. Like, how did that come to be? And what other like set routines or segments do you make sure you have every episode versus making sure the conversation is free and flowing?
The conversation with the guest is always free and flowing. There's nothing that's really repetitive there. The draft, I should go back, actually. Let me go back to my first podcast on Yahoo. And I did, I think, 41 episodes for them, 40 or 41 episodes for Yahoo. And on every episode, I would have a segment at the end called 4 on 4. And it was a topic. It was 4 random things. And I was the number 4, you know. So it was like 4 on 4. So the guest and I would choose 4 things. I think in the Jared Dudley episode, my very first episode, we did 4 overrated things. I chose the Beatles. I think he chose the Cowboys. We just had a little riff there. With Tommy, we were just kind of like ranking things for a couple months. And then we had Russillo and Big Cat on at the same time. And so the 4 of us decided we were going to draft TV characters you'd most like to be quarantined with. This was about 2 or 3 weeks into the quarantine back in March. And people loved it. And so we just were like, let's start doing this every episode. Now, I don't know how much longer we can go. At some point, you might have to repeat some topics. But for right now, we've still got a few topics left to draft that we haven't taken out of the bag yet.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the evolution moving from working with a publisher like The Ringer to now Old Man and the Three, the new podcast you launched earlier this year with Cadence 13. And then you also mentioned your podcast initially launched back in the day with Yahoo. What goes in from your point of view to selecting a partner, working with a partner, and really the business side of the pod?
When I first launched with Yahoo, that was largely driven by my relationship with Woj, with Adrian Wojnarowski. So Woj had asked me to do a project with him on the vertical platform that he was going to getting ready to launch. And initially it was to write some things. And I was like, Woj, this is not all that different from the Players Tribune. It doesn't excite me. So he came back to me a couple months later and said, do you want to do a podcast? And at the time, again, there were no athletes doing that. We partnered with a company at the time called Digital Media. That team is now the Cadence team. It's the same exact, same ad people, same producers. So it was very comfortable when I left The Ringer that we were going to partner with them on this. The thing that makes The Old Man and the Three unique is ownership. And, you know, I did 100 episodes between Yahoo and The Ringer, and I never owned one episode. I didn't own the RSS feed. I didn't have any say or control over what clips were going on social media. So this has been a more challenging experience, but a more rewarding experience because there's a little more creativity involved, and you know we can sort of go in any direction we want to go in, including launching merch, which we're getting ready to launch our merch website in the next couple weeks prior to Thanksgiving. And everything's picked out. The order's been made. So we're really excited about that and all the creative avenues that you can go down as you build out not only this podcast, but our company.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that piece about having ownership in your own business, because this is something that Tim and I talk about a lot on the show, especially when we have guests on that, you know, towards whether it's the beginning of their career, realize, hey, I'm doing a lot of endorsements and that's great, but you know, when the endorsements dry up, I don't really have anything, right? And so starting to build some ownership early on in their careers, and it seems like you're, you know, realizing that as well, however many years into having done podcasting. You know, what I'm really curious about is, given this broader landscape of athlete-led media, whether it's the Players Tribune, as you mentioned, or Uninterrupted, or any of these new platforms that are coming up in podcasting and video, what in your mind differentiates what you've been building with Old Man and the Three? And even broadly beyond that, what differentiates in your mind your media company in this landscape?
I think the idea of creative control of the content is what's probably most appealing, because at the end of the day, whether it's an hour and a half on a show, it's content. And I want to put out great content. Tommy wants to put out great content, and we want to have control of that content. There's a couple ideas that we have that we think could eventually be derivatives, meaning a television show someday. And we want to own that. We certainly want to own that if that could be the case. What you're seeing, I think, across the board is athletes realizing that ownership is really all that matters. And, you know, I have a friend, Channing Frye, who just started his own wine brand that he owns with a couple buddies of mine. And you know, he's building that brand and building that company, and he owns it. He's not partnering with an existing winery. He's building his own wine brand. LeBron is probably the greatest example of this, because he decided to do this a long time ago when he fired the Goodwin brothers and started his own agency. And that's a great word to use here. He took agency over his entire career. Every asset of his career, with the exception probably of you know, his contract with the Lakers, is ownership. So when he partners with the brand, he's not looking for an endorsement. He's looking for equity in that company. And that is the blueprint now for all modern athletes.
You know, we've talked a lot about this idea of taking agency and ownership, which I think is fantastic and is obviously a newer trend as it comes to athletes wanting to have ownership over the things that they produce. I do wonder if there's another part of this, which is that, you know, especially in the NBA or even in other sports that we've had guests on the Game Plan, nobody plays for the same team anymore. And so it's not like the old days where you would play for 10 years for the same hometown team and then you retire and now you can start a business and you're suddenly the local hero. When you're playing for a different team every other year, you know, you kind of have to find a different way of building your connection to the audience. And so I do wonder if some of that is something that plays into athletes building their own media brands today. And I don't know if you've even thought about it. Maybe I'm just projecting. But I am curious how much of that factors into the way that you build your platform.
It does. And I basketball is the exception. Maybe not the only exception, but an exception to sports fandom. And by that, I mean basketball fans, by and large, are fans of players. There's not, you know, there's exceptions to this, of course. Boston Celtics fans are going to be Boston Celtics fans. But I'm sure there were a lot of LeBron fans that bought Heat jerseys when he went to Miami. And there's a lot of LeBron fans that bought Lakers jerseys that weren't Lakers fans before when he went to the Lakers. And so that's what makes our experience, I think, unique in connecting with fans and connecting with companies, is that, you know, we exist sort of separate from the NBA teams. We exist as sort of our own separate entity and our own separate brand.
Do you feel that as well from fans, where maybe sometimes they almost recognize you more for the podcast than immediately on the basketball side?
Yeah. I mean, you guys know this. I live in New York City, so I'm walking down the street. Occasionally I'll get, oh, hey, man, I'm listening to your podcast right now. And And or, you know, the other day I was grabbing lunch with Chelsea, my wife, near Knox's school, and a guy tapped me on the shoulder. He's like, "Oh my God, the old man of the three." I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah, it may have been because you had an old man in the three mask on. But
no, I don't have the merch yet. I don't have the merch yet. But look, I do think the podcast specifically has been an amazing avenue for me to connect with people. I think not the advantage that I have, but the strength that I have is that I've always been able to just be willing to let my guard down and really willing to talk in an authentic way. And I recognize this after one episode, people responded to that. You know, I look back at those first 5 to 10 episodes, maybe even 20, maybe even 40, I don't even know. But I look back at those early episodes and I'm like, I wasn't very good, but people were responding to the authenticity of it. People were responding to the insider's point of view. It was something unique. And that's carried with me for the last, you know, nearly 5 years since I started podcasting.
Yeah, and you talk about it as a creative enterprise, which it certainly is. That's a lot different than maybe being able to go to the gym and, you know, going through the exact same routine every single day or week or month. But what kinds of things do you do to help further and advance yourself as it relates to the media aspirations that you have?
Reps are the biggest key. And Tim, you've said that to me before. I mean, even in starting this podcast before, you know, you get a few under your belt, you figure out what works, what doesn't work. You get a little bit of confidence. You feel stronger about your own creative performance, and you keep building and keep growing from there. There's only so much creativity I can have with a basketball workout. I try, but there's only so much creativity.
Yeah.
But I think it comes back to just reps and confidence. And, you know, I challenged myself a few weeks ago. I did a thing for overtime. It was a live stream of two finals games. I had a guest on for every quarter. Other than a 10-minute break at halftime, it was literally 3 straight hours of live streaming. I've never done anything like that before. And I knew it was going to be, you know, a challenge. And I think it went great. But the point was, I learned from that experience. I got confidence from that experience. And the next thing that I do that's similar or that's like that, or that maybe is a step above that, I'll have that confidence knowing I already did that. Even hosting the panel earlier this morning for the Stanford Business School, doing things like that gave me confidence. Last year in Philly, I spoke at the law school at the University of Pennsylvania. So these are like tests. They're mini tests. You know, there's no way to measure results in this industry. And so you put yourself through a test, you learn from it. What did I do well? What did I do wrong? You get a little bit more confidence, and then you move to the next thing.
Yeah, certainly nothing compares to playing in front of 20 or 30,000 screaming fans, which we all hope, you know, will come back sooner than later. We've heard that from past guests, you know, guests like Detlef Schrempf talks about, like, there's no replicating that post-career. And I'm sure you're very happy to still have that as, you know, an active athlete. But at the same time, some of the things you just mentioned, hosting this panel with Stanford Business School this morning, or, you know, we've seen you talk to David Solomon, the CEO of Goldman Sachs. Like, you're constantly in these situations talking with really interesting people, whether it's part of your podcast or otherwise. And that's pretty fascinating. Do you ever stop and just pause for a moment to kind of take in some of that and be like, wow, this is pretty cool who I get to talk to here by way of, you know, not even necessarily the basketball things, yeah, but what you've been able to build off the court?
I do. I do take pause. I do reflect. You know, I grew up and I considered myself an introvert. And through life experience and through my relationship and marriage to my wife, Chelsea, I have become more of an extrovert. And I feel comfortable in most situations. And a lot of that, again, comes down to reps. I met David Solomon back in 2016. I spoke at a panel for Goldman Sachs in Napa. We chatted for 30 minutes afterwards and we become friends. And, you know, he has amazing emotional intelligence, and he was someone that I immediately was drawn to and immediately felt super comfortable around. And what I've found as I've gotten older is, you know, I've been able to tap into all these networks that I'm connected to. It's like a spider web. You know, of course, I'm an NBA player, and so I have that network. But beyond that, there's all these different networks, whether it's the Duke network or the Financial Industries network. And what I've done is I've built authentic relationships, like legitimate friendships in all those areas. And I don't look at those friendships or those relationships as transactional at all. I have no idea if any of these things will matter in post-career life, and nor do I care. I've enjoyed getting to know really amazing, like-minded people.
Yeah, I want to double click on that point you said earlier about getting the reps, because I think it's so true for Tim and I. And we were talking about, I guess, a couple months ago, like every 10 episodes, it feels like we almost like revamp the show in a way, like we'll add a new segment or we'll play with video or we'll do something new. And I think some of that in a way is keeping the show fresh. And I think another way is to keep the show fresh is to obviously change up the kind of guests that you bring on. So now in getting those reps, having done those for 4 years, are there certain tendencies that you have picked up and can share with us as budding podcasters that get the most out of the guests that you have on?
I've found that direct questions work really well. Direct questions you can't escape. So, you know, there has to be a level of comfort that the guest has with you. Of course, Tommy always calls us Switzerland when it comes to the NBA. We're Switzerland. We have no affiliation to any agency, to any team or group or any agenda. We just want to have great basketball conversations with players. And the agents and the teams and the handlers now know that. And, you know, they'll tell the guys beforehand, hey, go have a good time. Go be yourself. That's all they want. They're not going to grill you or anything. So when we ask a direct question, we generally get a truthful, candid answer. We're not here to beat around the bush. We're not here to like manipulate anyone. We just really want honest, open conversation.
Yeah. Is there a time that you sort of recognize that with a guest where, you know, somebody, I think a lot of folks, they come on, they have talking points, right? Or they've been asked the same questions a couple of times. Is there a time that you can think back to with, you know, even with Old Man and the Three or beyond that, where you kind of got a guest to let their guard down a little bit and sort of let you into something interesting?
Well, Jimmy Butler's naturally going to let his guard down and just be honest. So the two episodes we did with him on The Ringer were great.
I believe there was also wine flowing in one of those episodes.
That always helps. Whenever we can add in the element of alcohol to the podcast, it just, the COVID things made it hard because, you know, we're not doing it in person. But one of our last episodes, I think the second to last episode we did on The Ringer was with Patrick Beverley, and that's still, of the 125 episodes that I've recorded over the last almost 5 years, that still is in my top five because he just was so raw. I mean, he was just a real guest who told real stories, who told real feelings, you know. And one of the things about athletes or celebrities in general is to maybe the average fan, they can be unrelatable. And so when you can get guys to open up, and you can see that, oh, this guy has insecurities or this guy is vulnerable in this way, they become much more relatable. One of the things that social media has done and that a lot of talking heads on television has done is it has dehumanized the athlete. And what we try to do is humanize the athlete.
It does seem like, though, that you have an uncanny ability to draw out a more authentic version of whoever your guest is. And yes, that's true, especially on maybe the basketball guys that you have on. And there's certainly a lot to the fact that you're an active player with them as well. But it seems like there's something more to it than that. Is that something that you've identified? And is there really any explanation for that?
I don't know that there's an explanation. I think if you've ever seen the movie Inception, you know that the initial goal of that group was to extract information. But when you can perform Inception to a degree and get a guy to really just let every guard down, then I think that's sort of the supreme episode to me. When we've been able to do that. And there's nothing intentional about it. I'm not trying to manipulate anyone. I'm just trying to get to the meat of the conversation. I'm just trying to get to the real substance that we all want to talk about. And look, it doesn't always work. I'll be the first to admit that. And, you know, what we found that, you know, generally speaking, older, more mature players are more willing to provide and reflect because they've been through way more. And younger players are not at the stage where they are completely confident in who they are. I wasn't at 21 or 22. I couldn't have properly reflected on my career or my lifetime. I mean, you know, you get somebody on like Carmelo, who's my age and he's been through everything. He's much more, you know, willing to open up.
Yeah, and Jay's actually written about this a little bit before, how pro athletes are the modern day Renaissance men, if you will. And you've talked about other interests you have, whether it be wine or at one point watch collecting. But with what you've been able to uncover through your pod and your production company, how does that idea of being a modern day Renaissance man, whether or not you look at yourself that way, how does that project maybe for the future potential and aspirations you have beyond basketball?
I've always had other interests. And this is the really, I would call it a paradox in my life, is I've always had other interests. I've always had obsessions. And for the most part, I will get interested in something. I will obsess about it. And I'll go down the rabbit hole. And when I feel like I've gotten too far down the rabbit hole, I'll climb myself out and I'll be fine and I'll move on to the next thing. So I look out, you know, and I started doing this at 29 or 30. I look out beyond basketball, what I want to do post-career. And there's so many things. And I could go down that rabbit hole. I could go down that rabbit hole. But what I've chosen to do over the last 6 years is I've chosen to just enjoy this last, hopefully, decade of my first obsession. The one obsession that I've never gotten sick of, that I've never gotten tired of, the rabbit hole that I have no desire to ever climb out of. And that's playing basketball. You know, shooting a basketball and watching that ball go through the net, there's no better feeling in the world to me. So, you know, I recognize those other things, but I'm not at the point yet where it's like, oh, I want to make a profession out of these things. And even for podcasting or for media stuff, again, this was all born out of a curiosity and a willingness to sort of challenge yourself to do something a little different and initially, especially do something that you're really uncomfortable with.
Yeah, I want to highlight that part because I think that's something a lot of people miss. You know, we are in this era where every celebrity, every athlete wants to have that side hustle, although I know that's you know, can be somewhat of a diminutive word. Like, they want to have something. They want to have their startup. They want to have their venture fund. And what I really respect about how you've done it, because you've been able to do it so consistently, is that you have to love it.
Yeah.
And I said this to Tim when we started. I'm like, Tim, no one's going to listen to this for the first 25 episodes. And even then, who knows, right? But the reason the show was fun for us is because these are conversations we have at the bar.
Yeah.
And now we're bringing on the mic. And so I think that's something that I really appreciate you saying, because a lot of folks want to own their own media. They want to own their own distribution until they start doing it and they just realize how freaking hard it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work. The way our contract worked with the Ringer, we were done August 1st, and I knew I was going to be in the bubble August 1st, and games started July 30th in the bubble. And up until about June 18th, I wasn't sure if I was actually going to leave the Ringer or if he was even a possibility. And I talked to Bill. I told him, hey, here's what's going on. We really want to own the podcast. We really want to own the IP. We really want to own the RSS feed. I'm going to talk to other companies to partner with them to do our ad sales and to help with production. He said, I totally understand. We talked to a few companies. We got a counteroffer from the Ringer. Ultimately, we decided to partner with Cadence. That was like on July 23rd. Okay. We're sitting there coming up with the PR strategy for release. And they're like, well, who are the first few guests going to be? I'm like, well, we're recording in like 8 days for our first guest. We have no idea. So the last 3 months, like literally it's three conference calls a day. We've got a weekly merch call. We've got a weekly call with our lawyers about IP, about trademarks. It has been a lot of work. And keep in mind, I'm still training 6 days a week. Most days, except Sundays, I'm doing two a days. So scrambling all that in, yeah, it's not for the weak of heart. It is absolutely, you've got to be willing to go after something. I want to touch on one thing that you just kind of brought up, in that, you know, whether you're producing, you know, a podcast, making a podcast or a television show, or even going on television to be a talking head on CNN, Fox News, ESPN, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's very different than sport, because in sport, it's very easy to measure results. And when you're doing this, so much of the result is subjective, and so much of the result is someone else's reaction. And so you really do have to get to a place where the work and the final product that you put out, that has to be the win. So I have to be proud of what I just did. I have to be proud of the content I just put out. And once I put it out, I just have to be willing to live with the reaction.
Yeah, there is no scoreboard. Although I will say, I just checked before we came on, you now have over 164,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is pretty damn good for about 2.5-3 months, probably, with very little promotion. So I think that probably feels pretty good.
The reaction we've had on YouTube has been amazing. I wish that I had owned my RSS feed for the last 5 years and been able to sort of transfer the podcast along these same RSS feeds, because, you know, I would love to see what our subscriber and download numbers would be had we kept that, you know. But we started from zero on both YouTube and on Spotify and Apple back in August. The reaction to NBA players on video, and we're just doing Zoom right now. That's the funny thing. We're putting up Zoom videos on YouTube. We're not even at the point where we can meet with these guys in person again and put in highly produced videos. And we're putting up Zoom videos, and the reaction to them has been amazing. I think one of the real, not strategies, but one of the real concerted efforts that Tommy and I wanted to make when we started this podcast is we wanted this podcast to feel much like a community. And you mentioned earlier, we got a guy, Ryan Cohen, who's from Philadelphia. He's a lawyer, full-time job. Every single week, every episode, this guy's writing these really detailed, really funny recaps of our drafts. He's got a scoreboard. He's keeping count of who wins, Tommy, me, or the guest. You know, we've had these merch giveaways that Adidas has helped us with, where we're giving away to new listeners and to longtime listeners. And so it's really been about sort of just like building a community. We want people to be in on it with us. Like, we want people to feel a part of this podcast, where when I'm talking to somebody, they feel like they're in our living room with us.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the feeling that I've gotten from the episodes that I've had a chance to listen to so far. I do want to push back a little bit on the point you made about having found the audience that you guys have for the show this early on. I do wonder how much of it, and I know it's hard to sort of say in the inverse, I do wonder how much of it ties back to the fact that you did have 3 years to develop a brand and develop a voice on a platform like The Ringer. How did that help you in terms of finding the voice and audience for the show that you're doing today?
Yeah, no, I think had I known about ownership, I think the original thing with Yahoo, I would have pushed for that. You know, I was never going to get that with The Ringer. I knew that. I signed 3 1-year contracts with them. I knew that I was never going to get ownership with them. But Bill provided me with an amazing opportunity because of The Ringer's platform, because of The Ringer's reach. And Tommy was working for The Ringer at the time. And so Tommy was able to access a lot of the guests and booked a lot of the guests that we had on the show. So I have no regrets about working with The Ringer for 3 years. It was an amazing experience. And when we ultimately had the final conversation with Bill about this, he actually said, if it's about ownership, it's not with us. And so we felt very good, like, after our conversations that, you know, this is the right decision that we're making.
So, JJ, you've been really gracious with your time. We appreciate having you on. I guess we'll wrap with a question we like to ask. I was going to ask, you know, what are you most excited about? You detailed some of the things you have coming with The Old Man and the Three and 342 Productions. You know, what can we expect as listeners of the 342 Productions? What's to come?
Well, I can't divulge anything because nothing is done yet. But I will say this. We are in talks right now with 2 people to host a podcast on our platform. One is an NBA person. One is in the media. They're both amazing people. I think they're both going to be superstars in this space. One already kind of is, actually. And then there's another show that we will launch soon. We're still tinkering with the format of it, but it's called Eat, Pray, Dunk. Yeah, we're big on puns. Big pun people. So, and then the merch. I mean, look, the merch is going to be fun. I think we're going to do, just some basic stuff, hoodies, t-shirts, crew necks, hats, masks, of course, mask up for COVID. But as this continues to grow, you know, we'll look into doing some more topical things and fun t-shirts that I think people will get a kick out of.
Well, we appreciate that. I'll ask one last question that we usually love to get from our guests, because we know that the listeners of the show aren't just venture capitalists and startup people, but also young athletes, some that are, you know, in college and in high school, and others that maybe even be playing right now. As you look back on your NBA career and now having developed your passions off the court, what is some advice that you would have for your younger self beyond the ownership point, which I know we've covered, but beyond that, what is some advice that you have for your younger self on how you develop those passions off the court?
I would say, you know, I think it comes with maturity, but finding the balance between your love and your responsibilities on the court and then your pursuit of your interests off the court is not an easy thing to do. And I wish I had started thinking about it sooner. My mind was in a little bit of a bubble, as many 21, 22, 23, 24 year olds are. And it wasn't until really, you know, I started having children that that was 30, that was the summer I turned 30, that I started thinking about these other things and how I could grow personally in these other pursuits and in these other interests. So, you know, my advice would just be like, just open your eyes, bro. Like, it's not just about video games and basketball and girls. You know, there's some other things that are important in this world. And thankfully, I realized that soon enough, and I've been able to develop as a person and develop my own voice and my own thinking without compromising any of my values or anything, any of that stuff.
Awesome. Well, thanks, JJ. We encourage all our listeners to check out The Old Man and the Three anywhere they listen to podcasts, and we'll be rooting for you as things go on.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Take care, man. So that's it for this week's episode of The Game Plan with Jay Kapoor and Tim Cott. Thanks for listening. We've got a few shout-outs before you go. Thank you to JJ Redick for his time and perspective. If you liked what JJ had to say, make sure to follow him across social media on Twitter and YouTube. Special thanks to our partners over at Sport Techie. We're excited to launch this season with them and look forward to many more episodes. And hey, if you made it this far, you must really like The Game Plan. Make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast and find us on Twitter at The Game Plan Show. We'll see you next week on The Game Plan.